excuse me.
I will jump right into the show, start of the show. We are show 75, and today, oh man, it's the last day of May. Okay, here we go.
No, it's the first day of June.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Cue him.
You guys suck. I'm waiting for YouTube to start.
That's right. You're supposed to go in 5, 4. How did I do it? I'm doing it ass backwards. I'm counting up while I'm counting down.
One more time, Rich. Lead me in with it. Here we go. Give it to me.
In 5, 4, 3.
This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 75, recorded on May 31st, 2012. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live and almost commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here. And we've had some pretty serious cold weather roll through. It's been like in the 50s, which is odd for the last day of May. But it's kind of nice to open the windows and let the cool air in. I think summer is on its way back, and so we'll be returning to the 90s by Tuesday. That's living here in the Midwest in the United States. Of course, we post the show each week to theaverageguy.tv, and we also post it with world-class show notes done none other than by our good friend in Australia, Andrew. Andrew, thanks for doing those last week, by the way.
Oh, that's good. I'm back. I'm back with a vengeance.
Yeah, and they're like a million times better when you do those for me. So if you want to contact the show, send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can track us down on Twitter. I'm just @JayCollison, and the Twitter traffic for the show has been picking up a little bit. So a good way to get in touch with me if you have any questions. We've been running a weekend show around Windows Phone and in a Lumia 800 device that I got from Nokia couple weeks ago, and if you want to join us for that, we've been doing those during Rich's podcast segment Sunday, 2 p.m. Central Time here in the United States. If you want to join us live, we've been over the next couple weeks, we'll be filling in that spot with the Windows Phone discussion. We also have all the links to automatically download or stream the audio podcast to iTunes or Zune or Stitcher, and actually the Stitcher numbers are coming up, and that's not a bad way to listen to the podcast on Stitcher. Or any other podcatchers available. It's just right on the front page of theaverageguy.tv. And something we're trying now, in fact, it's going on right now. We're broadcasting live out to YouTube. And so if you ever come in and want to catch the show, just search for The Average Guy TV on YouTube, and you can see the show live there. Of course, the show is broadcast every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, out at theaverageguy.tv live. If you are on the social sites, you can do me a favor, Facebook, Google Plus, YouTube, any of those things, iTunes. If you're out there and you like the show, leave a comment, hit a plus one, a like, whatever. That always helps with our search rankings when we are when folks are looking for us. Okay, so Christian and Gary are both off tonight, kind of an unusual night. Christian is on his way to Langley and will actually check in with us on Sunday, I think, with his new rig and his new location and his internship at NASA. And so congratulations, Christian. We miss you tonight, but we know he'll be back on the show next week. The other guy that joins us each and every week whenever he can and whenever work doesn't steal him away, of course, is Andrew Morris. Andrew, how are you?
I'm very well now. I've had an interesting week. I've had a kidney stone this week, so a fair bit of pain and suffering, but coming good.
Yeah, that's no fun. And it's not over yet, right? I mean, you're kind of in the middle stage of that?
Yeah, I'm in the middle stage.
Oh, so you know the worst is yet to come.
Yeah, something like that.
It's like a root canal. You know you got to get it, and it's coming, and it's just going to be painful. So I'm sorry. Do they give you any kind of pain medication, or is there anything that they can do?
I've had some pain medication for the first part. The second part, you just have to suck it up,
I think. Yeah, just grin and bear it. Are you a big coffee drinker, Andrew? You drink a lot of coffee?
One or two cups a day. So okay. I think it's more salts and calcium, because I'm on a very heavy dose of vitamin D at the moment. So
Okay. Yeah, I've heard coffee can be, I'm even contemplating, because you're like the fourth guy in the last 2 months that I know that's had a kidney stone. And and so they always say drink lots and lots and lots and lots of water. And so I've always thought, cup of coffee, glass of water, cup of coffee, glass of water. So
And warm water as well. Cold water is bad for you.
Oh, I know, but it tastes, warm water's nasty. Just you don't feel, You don't feel refreshed. Well, also joining us tonight, Andrew, I'm sorry about your kidney stone. We'll expect a full update by next week. Hopefully it'll be gone by then. Joining us this week and in his regular guest spot, of course, is my friend out on the East Coast, Rich O'Neill. Rich, how are you?
Good, Jim. How you doing?
Good. Hey, you got a new bike.
I got a new bike. I got a Specialized...
you didn't get a DeLorean.
No. I heard about your DeLorean. That's kind of
crazy. Yeah. Andrew looked up the price on that thing. It was like $5,000.
Oh, nice. Well, you know, that's what they
it's
go for.
Yeah.
No, it's affordable. It's fairly cheap. Yeah, this is pretty nice. It's a Sector Sport. It's got the carbon fiber forks, and I think the seat stem is carbon fiber, and it's quite a nice ride.
Nice. Pretty light? Yeah. How heavy is it?
I don't know how heavy it is, Jim, but I mean, I can hold it out at arm's length with one arm and smile. Yeah, I mean, it's just,
nice.
It's so light. It's the nicest bike I've ever had. It was just under $1,000 for the bike. So.
Road bike, then?
It is, yep.
Okay, very nice. Yep. And did you go toe clips, or are you going to do shoes?
I've got toe clips. Okay, yeah. I got to learn the terminology. Yeah, sure. I got toe clips now. I'm going to get the shoes. So.
Okay. Yeah, and shoe technology has really come a long way on those.
Shoes are so much better than clips.
Yeah, they're very, very comfortable. It's like a tennis shoe, and it allows you to both push and pull, and so that's a great. Any other technology on the bike? Did you get any kind of...
I got a computer. I got a little bike computer, so it's a Cadence, so it mounts in the back, too. It counts the cadence, so it doesn't matter what gear I'm in. It just wants to see how many times the pedal passes the point, you know, how fast, what RPM, I mean.
Okay.
So I can ride it like an exercise bike, and I bought a trainer. I bought a trainer secondhand, so I've got that hooked up, you know, a little resistance trainer. And so I can set it down in the cellar for rainy days and let my cadence computer, you know, so I can go... pedal it like at least 80 RPM or something like that, in the gym. So it's
cool.
It's nice. Yeah.
Good little exercise bike. You know, a buddy of mine, we were talking about Garmin watches, which is real common among, you know, running athletes. And he'd picked up a new one that's waterproof, and it's meant for triathletes. So you can wear it both in the pool, you know, out in the lake, you know, you can transition right into the bike and then on the run. And then so we were talking about various websites and watches, and they actually make a watch form, whatever that is, for your bike, so that it, you know, it's as big as the watch itself, and it clamps onto the handlebar on your bike. And then you just strap the watch onto that, and it can, so you don't have to wear it, because it's not super comfortable wearing a watch when you're biking.
Yeah, this is small too. This thing's about like an, you know, maybe an inch and an eighth, inch and a quarter by an inch and a quarter. So it's small. It's, you know, liquid crystal, you know, diode. Yeah. It's like gray against black or black against gray. So, you know, the contrast isn't super, but, you know, hey, it's a good starter. Bike computer made by Sigma. So
okay.
I guess they're
They make nice gear. I'm a long-time bike geek, so...
Oh, you are? Okay. I'll have somebody to talk to about it, yeah.
You know, it'd be kind of fun to start a bike discussion out on the Facebook site if you've, you know, because the technology now that goes into these bikes is pretty amazing. And we talked about the DeLorean last week, but there's some pretty amazing stuff that goes from carbon fiber rich, like you mentioned, to the, you know, to the computer systems that go in, you know, they can go on the handlebars and kind of monitor your every move, including GPS. You know, it won't be long before they rig up a Raspberry Pi to the bike. And
and speaking of Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, speaking of Raspberry Pi, is that a transition?
Yeah.
Did you get one, Jim?
No, it's a transition over to John Zadler. Of course, John is a host over at the homeservershow.com, and took a couple weeks off over there, and so we're making up time and have him on the show. Of course, with Christian and Gary being off, John is always happy to join us here. John Zadler, how are you doing?
Hey, guys. Doing good. Enjoying the week of the first week. Well, I guess by the time the podcast comes out, it'll be the first week of June and release preview for Windows 8. And, I got one of those Raspberry Pis on order. So hopefully
when's it going to ship? Do you know?
I think they said August 16th for me.
Okay.
So who knows if that's the... you know, that's because that's it. Sometimes you have a date that says when it'll be available for you to order it or when they're going to ship it. So I think that, hopefully that's the ship date.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's long enough. Yeah. So.
$35, and so for the average guy, of course, the Raspberry Pi, if you're not following, that's basically a microcomputer, $35. It's a circuit board. Basically, it's just the circuit board and the components, right? I mean, it's the chip soldered on there and everything you need with a USB port. And what other ports are on there, John?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's they had a version, which was $25, but now the most popular one that they're in production now is the $35 one, which has, yeah, two USB ports, a network connection. It's a 10/100, so it's not a gigabit, but it's fast enough. It has a HDMI connection. It has an audio connection, like a 3.5-millimeter audio. It has what else? It has like a USB power, so that's what's nice about it, because you don't have to go, you know, spending more money or paying an additional cost of getting a power supply for it. You can use like any, because you know now with the phones, right? They have the micro USB power, so that's it. If you have an adapter lying around the house, as long as it's rated for 750 milliamps, which is 3/4 of a watt, that'll be enough to power that thing. And that's it. So it's a nice little gadget, and it's got everything on there. You know, basically all the chips, all the RAM, the whole shebang. So and it's based on Linux Linux OS. So you can put Debian or different makes of Linux on there.
Will it run Ubuntu then? I take it.
Yeah, I think guys have chatted about it. I don't know how much demanding, because I know Ubuntu is pretty. You know, it's like the big flavor. You know, it's got all like the bells and whistles. So I don't know how if the guys have completely installed. Cause that's the thing, is right with the different versions of Linux, you have small packages and bigger packages, and you can decide to install the whole package or little packages. And it ends up with that. In the case of that Raspberry Pi, your OS is actually, there's no hard drive. It's a SD card. Like, you know, these little guys, these SD cards. So what happens is you put your OS on there. So if you put a whole Linux distribution, I think they said it takes about an hour to get it installed, like, on the chip. But once you power it on and everything's installed, then it's just a couple of seconds and you're good to go. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice little project that these guys over at RaspberryPi.org is the site. And, you know, they're trying to get people, or basically school students and stuff, back into programming and stuff there. That was a big thing 30 years ago. Well, you know, when the VIC-20s and the Commodore 64s and all those guys came out, the UK was, they had a big movement on that. And so it's nice to see these guys coming out with this little guy and get people back into programming and tinkering. And that's something that I like with, you know, soldering iron and Dremel tool. It was funny because they were saying, you know, you can build like an interface board to put between that and the an interface board to put between the circuit you want to build and the Raspberry Pi, so you don't blow it. But then they say, if it's $35, you're almost like, you don't care. All right, so I blew it. I'll just buy another one, you know? So that's what's neat about these things being so cheap. But then the whole story is that now, because they're really, you know, the production has just started, so they're, you know, there's a long waiting list. So hopefully maybe in 6 months they'll be up to speed, and then anybody can just pick up two or three.
Yeah, I was looking the other day, John. I saw that they've already got a port of XBMC to run on it. So, you know, that's an amazingly low powered
home theater
playback arrangement.
And that little chip, I mean, that's it. I think it's an ARM 11 CPU, and with, like you said, the XBMC. You know, I mean, that little thing. Imagine $35, and it outputs 1080p. So you got a good resolution on there, and that's it. And because, you know, obviously your OS, like I said, is on the SD card. You know, you can connect a USB drive to it, or you can connect it to your network and stream your content to this device, and then watch it on your TV. Yeah. So it would make a nice, because a lot of people, you know, they try to convert their PCs into a PC, you know, HD PC, like a, you know, dedicated PC at the TV. And some of these boxes are noisy, and they're spending extra money to get quieter fans and this and that. This thing is basically, you know, it's silent. There's no moving parts, and that's it. The SD card is, you know, it's no moving parts on that. So that might be a nice option for people to use.
Find a place to duct tape it to the back of your TV, and you're golden.
Yeah.
Well, John, thanks for coming on the podcast tonight. I will remind folks, we do have a couple viewers out there on YouTube, and if you came to us through Google Plus, this is the Home Tech Podcast, and you can find us over at theaverageguy.tv/live. If you're listening, you're not in chat. We do have a chat window open right below the video window on theaverageguy.tv/live, and you can join us over there. You can stay right where you're at. That's okay, too. You don't have to go away from YouTube, although we do not monitor the YouTube chat. So all the chat's monitored over at theaverageguy.tv/live. So welcome if you've come in from Google+. Well, appreciate you guys coming out tonight. We've got a full slate of stuff to talk about, I think. Of course, the conversation is going to be dominated by the Windows 8 release preview that came out today. We talked about it last night at on the Home Server Show. Kind of the consensus was it would be either today or tomorrow, and it did indeed come out today. John, at what point did you see it on TechNet? I assume that's where you got it from and started downloading it during the middle of the day.
Yeah, that's right. I was actually watching the live recording of Windows Weekly. And then they were chatting about it this afternoon. And so that's it. And they're talking about, you know, they were saying MSDN. And so I went to MSDN. I mean, you know, we got this subscription there. It's like, get on there, all right, start downloading. And I couldn't find it. There was a couple of places it said release preview. But then when you clicked on it, it actually brought you to the consumer preview, which was the previous edition.
So they didn't have all the links updated.
Yeah, that's not fun, because if you started downloading that and you know, and you're still waiting, you're like, and then after you realize, wait a minute, I got the old build. So, but then that's it. Maybe about half an hour after that, so that was maybe around 4 o'clock my time this afternoon. And then at least now, when you did a Google search, then those links started coming up. So you know, some of those guys, you know how it is. It's like they had a deadline that you couldn't release stuff until, let's say, Microsoft says, okay. Now the downloads are available. Now you can release your posts. So
yeah, I bet it was 1 p.m. Pacific, I bet, was the time, was the cutoff. That Microsoft likes to use that time. And so that's, you know, that's 3 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone, 4 on the Eastern Time Zone. So that would be my gut reaction. So you were listening to Windows Weekly Live. You heard about it. You went out, found it, started downloading it. How long did it take you to get it downloaded? It's not any bigger than Windows 7. There are some changes. Rich, you'd made a comment that you thought the 64-bit version was a little bit larger than the...
It was a lot larger. It was almost a whole gig larger.
Okay. And why they still are making 32-bit versions of that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I guess it seems kind of silly. So, John, I assume you downloaded the 64-bit version. You've got that installed on something at this point?
Yeah, that's it. I started two downloads because my bandwidth down is – I mean, we have caps, but my download is pretty good. So it's 30 gig download. So that's it. I downloaded the ISO because what I want to do is have a copy of it. And you know, burn it to like a, because if you burn it to a CD and you try and install it from the CD, you know, because it's a spinning CD, that's, you know, that's old technology. You know, it's gonna take a while for that install to get done. If you actually download the ISO and you copy it to a USB stick, and you make the Windows has a little tool to make that bootable, and you install it that way, the install will go a lot quicker. And so I had one download running that way, and then the other download I did from their site is I clicked on it, and it's basically it's like download and install right now. So it was from my Windows 7 desktop. That's it. The window opened just as if you would have the CD in your drive and you saw the interface there. So you had it downloaded. I saw an interface. It said, do you want to upgrade to Windows 8? So yes, because I'm taking my Windows 7 and I'm upgrading it. And that's it. The upgrade ran. And then what did it do? It asked me, oh, yeah, it runs a there's a check. Like if you go to their download site, their page, and then they have a compatibility check. So they'll scan through that, and they'll tell you what's good and what's not. In my case, I had Perfect Disk that it said, you know, you have to uninstall that. And I believe there was some game that I had it. It said I had to uninstall. So it uninstalled those two things. It asked to do a reboot. The reboot went. Then the thing popped up, the menu, the wizard, and it said, you know, let me scan again. It checked. And said, okay, we're good. We're going to start the install. So it was almost like when my son had his Apple there, and he downloaded, you know, the ISO for Mac.
Not
there. He upgraded to the Leopard there. It was like it's like a desktop install. It was like as if you installed any other little program. You just clicked on it, it ran it. Because that's it. When you use the USB or the CD, you know, you have to boot up. It boots off the CD. You have to make sure it's connected. You know, if you have an Ultrabook, it's like, what do I do now? I don't have a CD drive and this and that. This, it just kind of, it just went boom. So I rebooted. And it took about a few reboots and maybe 20 minutes. And bang, I'm up. So I'm running it now, actually.
And so give us some initial impressions of it. You had a well-documented discussion last night about it, but now that you got that up and running, any thoughts on it? Just right off the bat? You don't have to give a complete review, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the install, again, that's referring to, as far as the install, that went nice and smooth, so that went well. So there wasn't any problems there. And you could see that the most of the work was done for some of the Metro, I don't know if you want to call them add-ins, but the Metro apps, those were kind of cleaned up a bit. So that was a bit interesting. But as far as on my side, I don't know when you guys are going to get to install it, but since I'm Canadian there, I went to they have their app for music and the video, and they ask you to log in. And that's, even though it goes to the Microsoft site, I think there's some kind of like Zoom integration software or whatever. Anyway, it tells me your location, there's something wrong with that, and I get an error message. So that's still, it's like really, this is like supposed to be like, basically baked. I think they're saying that they're expecting it to be released RTM next month, July 1st. Which a lot of people are surprised. So it's a bit like, okay, if this is so good, then all of this stuff should be working. But maybe there's some of those, localization issues, different countries and stuff. So I had a little bit of a problem there getting that content going. I'm going to test out a little bit the libraries, because I know the previous build, when you wanted your content, if it was, it had to be in the libraries and it had to be kind of local and not necessarily on the network. So I'm going to try that out and see how that goes. But a lot of the other apps, the regular apps that I've been using, everything seems to be working properly. I know in this build, they do have the Aero Glass, which I have a better video card, so I can take advantage of the Aero Glass. But from what I understand in the final build, they're actually going to pull all of that stuff out. And I also heard that the stuff like, some guys were kind of like hacking, getting the start menu back in, and some of the familiarities that they had from Windows 7, they're trying to bring it back. And they were successful with those hacks in the consumer preview. But now, apparently, all this legacy code, like Microsoft took the time, because, again, the OS is more or less done, so they just kind of took the time to get rid of this code, maybe make the package a little smaller, even though the download is like 3 gigs for the 64-bit. They're cleaning all of that stuff up. They want to prevent people from getting into that. And one of the things Microsoft was saying early on is that they were going to allow people to boot like right into the desktop experience and just give them an option there to bypass the at least for corporate, for the desktop, for the business.
Right.
And, but apparently they pulled that code out. It's like, no, Microsoft really wants to put the screws to you to get into that Metro interface.
I think it'll come back. If they did take it out, indeed, I think it'll come back. There'll just be too many cries for folks who want to use it and want to go straight to the desktop. So it may be out for a while. My prediction is that it'll come flying back at some point. Or they'll release some kind of patch that allows you to enable that. John, does the desktop change much? There was some thought that they were going to add some more color to the desktop or to the Metro UI, because it was just 8 colors. Basically, it was like, I think I said last night, it was like Minecraft OS, yeah. Very, very, very plain. Any change in that?
Yeah, like they got a couple of more colors. Like when you go and you do the first install, the setup, it asks you, do you want this quick or do you want to kind of like, set a couple of settings, like give some information, like some sort of like checking your browser and stuff like that for bad code and stuff like that. And one of the options is that's it. In the Metro, you can change, I think before, like you said, maybe 16 colors, like background colors. Now you have, I think, 24 or such. You have quite a bit more. And also as far as the background themes. The backdrops, you have more choices. It's a different one than it had before.
Cool.
I didn't see the little fish before. And the other one there, you had like
for the beta.
Like
that's a beta fish.
Yeah.
No,
it was a bit like fish. It looked like what origami, I think you call it.
Right, origami. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a little fish, and like you said, and I didn't see that one this time. Yeah. Now it was more sharp. It was more clear. It was a Windows logo, nice black big black background, white Windows logo. Big font there, and then the little guy was kind of like, they had that little spinning wheel that they kind of
I don't think they're considering this their beta version anymore. I think this is what they're considering baked for release candidate, which is the next step, or I think OEM is maybe OEM, release to manufacturer is the next step. I think they think they're pretty much done, although there's going to be a ton of work that's going to need to be done on it. Rich, I know you were trying to get it downloaded. You don't have it downloaded yet, but your thoughts on Windows 8? Have you had much chance to mess with the consumer preview?
Not a lot. You know, I play with it a little bit, but you know, initially, as I said on my podcast, which is Random Podcast Generator, I thought the whole idea of what they were doing behind it was really interesting and cool. And while I was playing with 8 and then thinking how neat some of these things were and then thinking about going back to 7, I kind of got that feeling like we got when we first saw Windows 7 and we had been using XP. It's like, oh, I really, you know, don't want to go back to XP.
Right.
Now,
right.
Not to that same degree, but a little bit of that there. So I really, you know, I guess the point I'm trying to say is that I think there's some things there that are pretty cool. I like.
Okay.
But the more I think about that UI and booting to the start screen, that just aggravates me. And I'm waiting for somebody. I'm figuring somebody's going to make a hack so you can go to the desktop, and they'll probably put the button back for us too.
Right. Yeah, no doubt there'll be some hacks that come out. So. But, you know, I installed it on a laptop, and I'm 59% of the way downloading Windows 8 tonight. I just got to it when I got home, and it's, of course, everybody's trying to download it now, so it's going to take a while. But that's the first thing I'm hoping tonight when we're done with the show. I'll continue the download. I'll probably stay up late, put it on a laptop. I have been. It boots that laptop faster than Windows 7 ever booted on that thing.
You know why? Because it does some kind of hibernation sort of thing.
Well, that's fine. I don't care why. I just know it does.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it. I open that thing up, and bam, it's there. 6-7 seconds, ready to go. Hit the up arrow, sign in. Metro screen shows up. By far the fastest OS to the desktop for me. Now, if I want the desktop, I hit Windows D, and it goes right to the desktop. I mean, there are ways to make it, in its consumer preview version, make it very productive for you with a few simple steps. I got used to moving the mouse over into the corners to get the Edge UIs to work for me, to get the start menu, or, you know, if I'm in the desktop and I want to go back to the start menu, I can just go down and click that. I got really good at that, and I wished if it was a touch screen, it'd be even easier. Just and it would be there. I don't think it's as bad, or it hasn't been as bad for me. Andrew, what have you had much time to mess with it? I know you've been a busy guy lately, but have you had much time to mess with it?
I've had a bit of a play with it. I'm still a traditionalist. I still like the start menu. So I'm a bit in Rich's camp. I think it's like. It's probably like the transition from, say, Vista to Windows 7, where they brought in jump menus and stuff like that, and jump lists. I think they're limiting the uptake though by locking out the ability to get back to the start menu. You know, if they code that back into the API, like a lot of the blogs out there in the internet are saying, I think they're going to piss a lot of people off. I guess is the best way to.
Yeah.
The best way to describe.
Maybe so. Mm-hmm. Maybe so.
I don't know. Like, the thing is with the Metro apps, maybe on a laptop, when you got a small laptop, or again, the best, I think the whole reason for this Metro stuff is for either, basically, number one, tablets, and then number two, laptops. I mean, I have a 19-inch monitor. It's not that big, but let me tell you, I open the Mail app, and it takes the whole screen. It's like, this is so Windows 98. This is old school, man. It's taking up the whole screen. It's like, really? I don't want to see everything this giant and stuff. And then, you know, like somebody, you know, calls me on, I get a little tweet pops up, or a Skype, beep, beep, I get a little, then I got to close my app. You know, or move to the left, and then, you know, take one, click on the one that shows the icon, because that's it. Every time you open up a Metro app, it actually hides them, like sort of like on the left side there. You can hit the side of the screen, and you'll see that they'll line up. So now it's like you have to jump there and start. And a lot of people got used, like I would say, like the power users. You know, in Windows, you have multiple screens. Like right now, you know, I have 3 Windows browsers open. You know, whereas, you know, if this would have been just a Metro interface, like when you, if you use the Metro, Windows Internet Explorer in Metro, you can jump between windows, but you have to move to the top of the screen, and then you see big like squares. Then you kind of open it, and then they open full screen. But you can't have like three or four of them open up and just kind of move around to them. And I know Microsoft was kind of saying, you know, the whole reason that that's it, with the Windows 8, they're going to be saving a lot of battery power, because they actually said when you open these multiple windows like that, that all actually takes more CPU cycles, which, you know, that's it. The CPU cycles takes more energy. Energy takes battery. Your battery, you know, dies quicker, you know. So this is why having these full page apps and stuff like that, that saves on battery. But that becomes, for portable devices, you know, for your laptops and your tablets, it's like I shouldn't be tied into that group of, you know, the group of users when I'm using it as a desktop, in my desktop.
I think that's my beef. I don't want to be told how to find my applications. Like if I want to see what's running in one spot, I want to be able to see what's running in one spot. That's my biggest issue. I mean, every Linux variant I've played with recently, I mean, even they let you do it. You know, you can turn it on or turn it off. But even if I want to turn it on, then I want to be able to turn it on without having to go to something like this, you know, Stardock Start 8 application, yeah, or something like that to bring it back.
And I don't want to, guys, I don't want to belabor it too much, because there's a lot of discussion going on right now about this. You know, I think we'll find a good compromise in the sense that when you're on a tablet device, if it goes to the Metro UI, because that's really what that's designed for, and then for individuals still using PCs, however long that lasts for, and that is an era that's on its way out for the most part. I mean, the PCs, we're a dying breed from an enthusiast. I shouldn't say dying, we're a smaller breed now of enthusiasts using who are going to use desktops. I think eventually folks will just move right over to a tablet and not use a desktop at some point. So on the tablet, they use the Metro. We enthusiasts get to turn off Metro or do something where it boots over to the desktop that helps us do our desktop stuff. And I think that's a good compromise. I don't know why Microsoft wouldn't do something like that for us enthusiasts. Maybe not allow it to happen on a tablet or something. I know what they're trying to do, but at least in the interim while we're all trying to cut over, because I still have apps, I need to edit this podcast in Audacity. I need to use Windows Live Movie Maker to edit the video. That's not a great experience on a tablet. It's just not. I need horsepower. I need the mega machines to do that, and right now there's no tablets that are Core i7, and that's stupid. So it's just, you know, they're not going to make them that way. So there needs to be a compromise. I think Microsoft will get to that point and will make the compromise for us. It's just they're being a little hard-headed at this point about sticking, nope, it's going to be the Metro, and you're going to like it. And, well, okay, you're not Steve Jobs, and you can't do that.
I was going to say it's a little bit Apple, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of is. But the horse is already out of the barn.
Yeah.
And they can't possibly do that. So any other thoughts, guys, on Windows 8? John, you don't have that. What do you've got that? Let me ask this. What do you have that installed on right now?
That's a quad-core CPU, one of these shuttle PCs. So it's an older CPU, but it runs well. I got a nice video card, so everything is chugging along. I got a bunch of old video. And this is what I like, again, you know, the fact that Windows 8 can still, you know, run older program. I have a bunch of like Steam games, and maybe eight or nine Steam games, and I didn't have to uninstall any or get any patches.
Oh, nice.
So that went well.
Very cool. Well, that's good. That's in its camp. And you did a full upgrade, right? You haven't done a complete install yet. You did the upgrade.
Yeah, I did the upgrade, and as a matter of fact, I was surprised to hear Paul Theroux was saying that it actually handles upgrades better than they, like, in a way, like he said, an upgrade went better than doing a full install.
Well, that's different.
Because you have a lot of stuff already. Again, you know, you have your apps, and you're not starting fresh. Because I think the older versions, remember, they would say, oh, you better start with a free, you know, you better do a clean install and stuff like that, because, you know, you're going to have problems. But apparently they worked out a lot of those bugs, whatever problems people were having before. So doing an upgrade, maybe this program that runs to scan your programs and stuff, to see what's compatible or not, it's like it does a good job. So this is one thing that I was looking forward to, because like I said, you know, again, a lot of us have, let's say, Windows 7 for 3 years now. We've already fine-tuned our applications and stuff, let's say Office and this and that. you know, you don't want to have to do a whole new clean install, especially some of these people can't find your CDs. But in my case, it was very easy, you know, because since I have the Windows Home Server, if this would have, you know, died or whatever, then I could say, oh, no problem. I can go back to my Windows 7 image, you know, in 20 minutes' time, I'm back up. So, and all that stuff is working. My Windows version 1, the connector, and the Windows Home Server 2011 connector, like all that stuff is all still working.
Hey, John, when you did your upgrade, John, did you use the setup wizard or the preview setup, or did you just install boot the ISO and do an upgrade from that?
I did too. I download the ISO for like future use in case, you know, something has an issue, then I can get the ISO and get whatever files I need. So I do have that as like a backup. But then I said and that was a 64-bit. Yeah, I downloaded the 64-bit, but the OS that's on there now is a 32-bit. So I said, you know what? Just click on the upgrade button. I wanted to see how that went without, again, you know, going back to doing a whole clean install. And that wizard just, like that's it. It downloaded it. It gave me a counter, and it opened right on the computer, and it said I'm going to install it. So that's it. Didn't have to burn no CD or USB or whatever. So the install was straight from the website. And the reboot, and they rebooted 3-4 times, and that was good to go. That's happy.
Okay, cool. Because that's what you want too, isn't it? You just want that streamline, click, click, and it's done.
Yeah. For anybody who's not a PC person, like that's it. If you gave them a link and go to this site, it would be a very easy experience. They wouldn't be pulling out their hair and saying, "What did I do?" and stuff like that. And it was a good. They did it a good job. Yeah. That's what I gotta say.
And with the move to the Ultrabook as well, the platform without the optical drive in it, you know, to have something that you don't need to do the ISO install from, and it just happens the way it's meant to, is, you know, very reassuring as well.
Definitely,
Rich, you were gonna say something.
I just tried to do an update in VirtualBox on my consumer preview. I wanted to update it to. Whatever this is, right?
Release preview.
And started running, and then it stopped, and it says, this PC can't run Windows 8. And the message says, your PC CPU isn't compatible with Windows 8.
Hmm.
Really? What do you think you're running on now, buddy?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I don't know. I guess I'll have to just create a new machine.
Yeah.
And do a fresh install. But that's in a virtual machine.
Yeah, my plan. So, John, that's a good idea. Maybe on my laptop. So, did you go from 7 to 8 on your Shuttlebox there?
Yeah.
So you didn't go from 8 to 8. You didn't go from the consumer preview to the release preview.
No, apparently they lock you out there. Like there is some code. You could download the ISO and then kind of open it on your PC and delete a couple of lines so that it won't do this check. But it's like, you know, you're just kind of messing around with a plan for disaster.
Okay. So, yeah.
Best is to go. Unfortunately, like, okay, I got Windows 7 Ultimate is what I originally had, and this one, it doesn't say. It says Windows 7, right? Or it just says Windows. So I'm not sure if it's like the Pro version, but and then I think they said available later on. You might be able to go and click on it because they have what's called anytime upgrade. So no, not anytime upgrade. I think they worded it something differently. You'll be able to click on that and then go and actually go get that Windows Media Center add-in.
Right.
And apparently it's going to be like for this build, the release build is going to be free because that's supposed to be like a paid add-in, right, in the future.
Yeah. So it is gone.
Purchase it.
It's not in there for this.
Well, right now, if you click on it, it's like it's a dead page. Is what I was told. I actually tried to click on it, and then I tried to click on it, and it did a check, and it said, "Oh, your copy is not activated," because I did that online install, right? And when I did that online, nowhere there did it ask me for the license key, which it gives you on the download page. That's important for people to remember. When you click on the download page, you'll see there is a long code there, so you'll copy that down, and then later you'll need to put it in. So, or again, if you install from the CD or ISO, it'll ask you for that code. But mine just kind of like it went through, rebooted a few times, and I was good. So then I put in this Microsoft code that they gave me. I did a cut and paste, and it told me the code is no good. So I wasn't able to continue, but to nice. to validate it or whatever it is. Yeah. I'll try that again later. But from what I heard is that once it does validate, then you click on the anytime upgrade or whatever it's called, and then you should be able to get the Media Center update. Because that's another thing, right? Apparently, in this version, they pulled out, even though you have Windows Media Player, apparently there's no DVD playback. So if you took a DVD and put it in there and tried to play it, unless you have software, DVD software already installed, it's not going to work.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, my plan over the week, this weekend, I'll upgrade the, well, I'm actually going to blow away the laptop and put it, because it's 8 already, and I'll just put the new version of 8 on it. And then I'll probably create a VM of Windows 7 and do an upgrade just so I have the experience of how that goes and what that upgrade looks like. So over the weekend, if you're listening to us for the first time, and if you've joined us over from Google Plus, welcome to the Home Tech Podcast. You can find us over at theaverageguy.tv live. If you're just pulling this off of YouTube, we do broadcast each Thursday night live, and we do a live show, and you can also catch all the recorded versions and all the RSS feeds you need over at theaverageguy.tv. But thanks for whoever put that in the show notes. That's kind of funny. But the I got, now you've totally lost my train of thought. That's great. That's great. So we've got some upgrade work to do on Windows 8 over the weekend, and I think some fun times are coming. I was going to say, if you're the average guy and you want to try this out and you've got a fairly decent computer, you can use VirtualBox. It's an application. It's free. It's available from Oracle. Just Google VirtualBox. Pretty much if you're even just a little bit savvy with PCs, you can use VirtualBox. And you can install this consumer preview for free. You can download it from Microsoft. They'll give you the key, and you can give it a try. You need a fairly robust, a single core processor is probably not a great way to go about it, but if you've got something that you've bought in the last two years or so, VirtualBox should work okay. Give it a try. If you have any questions or need any help, send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Any other final thoughts on Windows 8 before we move on?
Yeah, I was going to point out, Jim, that, like you said, maybe you install on VirtualBox. One other option is, like, when we went to Windows 7, Windows 7 allowed you in disk management to shrink the size of your hard drive. So if you have shrink the usable size on your hard drive, like your partition. So right now, if you have, let's say, a 500 gig drive or 2 terabyte drive or whatever, you have lots of room, you know, that might be something to consider, is to shrink the drive and then install Windows 8 as a dual boot.
Oh yeah,
that's sure. When you put in that CD and you get it going, that's, you'll have the options to dual boot. So you might have to say, you know what, that's it. I'm going to test it, but I don't want to do, like, let's say, the upgrade and then not have a way to go back if you don't have a backup. And at the same time, you say, well, I don't want to swap out the hard drives or something like that. So that's it. That might be another option, is to say, look, I'll create that dual. And that's it. When you start that install, Windows will say, oh, you know, like, because that's it. You'll shrink that drive, and then you'll have the other partition. You'll say, okay, format that drive. Then when you put in your CD or your USB key and you boot up, it's going to say, oh, I see, you know, where do you want me to install it? And you say, I want it in that other partition. So then it'll do the magic necessary to say, okay, I'll install it there. And then when it boots up, you'll have like an icon that'll say, do you want a Windows 7 or you want your Windows 8 install? Okay. And then you pick the one, and from then on, it'll continue to look, you know, and it'll just default to that location. So
dual boot, I think dual boot is a little more complicated than maybe a VirtualBox, and I don't want to say a little more dangerous. You just have to be careful. Don't delete your Windows 7 partition in the process. But there's some step-by-steps out there if you want to get help in a dual boot situation. Again, if you have questions, we're your tech guys, so podcast@theaverageguy.tv. We'd love to help you out with that, or give you some advice on going forward, or how to contact John Zadler, because he's the guy that does. He knows how to do all that stuff. It's very helpful to me all the time. All right, a couple things. I want to move on to a different topic, but Sarah, my wife. Most of you, if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, you know she usually joins us as Mrs. Jim 70 in the chat. She's not here tonight. She's on her way out east for her sister's wedding, and she just arrived. And she said, "Make sure I tell everybody hi." So. She says hi. So hi.
Hey, sir.
Yeah, it's 16 or 14 hour day for her to get across there. That's a long, long day for her. So glad she made it safe. All right. I have to do a little self-disclosure here and say a couple weeks ago, I think I talked about this on one of the podcasts, the church asked me if I'd come out and speak for 15 or 20 minutes on internet security. And I thought, oh, sure, you know, I've done plenty of posts about that, and I'm pretty good at you know, talking through those kinds of things, and, you know, certainly doing the podcast and speaking like I do. 20 minutes, I could fill that up pretty much without thinking about it. So I thought, oh, here's a great idea. I'll create a post, and I'll put it on theaverageguy.tv, and then I'll go speak, and I'll just reference people over to the post. That's kind of the whole reason why I started the blog, you know, 5 years ago, was because I was, as the tech guys, and if you're listening to the show, you're probably your family's tech guy, and then people come to you to ask questions. I got sick of answering the same questions over and over and over and over again. I thought, well, if I can document it once and they have a problem, I'll just send them to the blog. So we started the blog, and it's out there, and so... So I wrote up this post and worked on it over the weekend and had 4 points about internet safety. You know, make sure your router is secure, install Microsoft Security Essentials. If you're worried about content filtering for yourself or for your kids, use a service like OpenDNS and install a product like K9 web filtering on the PC. Those are all just suggestions. Don't tell me, you know, I don't want to get into the filtering debate and all that other stuff that goes on. Those are security questions for you. They're well documented. Those products are very, very mature, and they work very, very well. Well, so on Tuesday night, I went out and spoke and came home. On Wednesday morning, our friend Rennie, who's always out in chat and who was on the show just a couple weeks ago, had an email from Rennie on my phone. And he said, Jim, when I click on your post, I get a Google warning that says your site has malicious software on it. And I'm like, what? So it's 5:30. I come downstairs, it's a little bit of a panic. If you've ever done anything like this, it's a little bit of a panic moment, right? You're like, oh crap! I just stood up in front of people, you know, a bunch of people, and said, hey, I'm cool, and I know what I'm doing, and you should listen to me. And then they come to my site, and of course, it pops up with the malicious software. Well, one, that was cool because I got to see this new Google feature. If you're using Chrome and you try to go to a malicious site, Google's kind of watching out for you, and if the site's got malware or bad links on it, it will pop up and say, hey, you're going to do this at your own risk. So, and it does let you past it, so that's pretty cool. I got to see that work. But I quickly went into the post and took out all, I thought, oh crap, I've got I got a bad link. I picked up out there, I picked up a bad image, or I picked up a link that had something buried. Maybe it wasn't on my site. Maybe it was a link to another site that had malicious software on it. So I wiped out all the URLs in the post, to no avail. It still said I had. And I don't know if it was in my cache or whatever. So I went into the blog post, wiped everything out. Well, first of all, I took the content out and I copied it to a text editor so that it would wipe out any kind of embedded or buried things in the post from a text standpoint. Deleted all the images off my blog site. So those were gone at that point. Ran antivirus on my blog site. No viruses there. So I was like, okay, I'm not, at least that's not, the site itself is not infected. And then took it out of the text editor, pasted it back in a brand new Windows Live Writer window or screen, and then posted it up and tried it, and it was fine. At that point, it worked just fine, and I was able to get rid. So that's why I think it was an embedded link. I picked up a bad link somewhere. I'm guessing didn't have a lot of time to do it, but I want to let you know, if you come out to my site and clicked on that and got the warning message, hopefully. But you know what? Even us tech guys, I guess the moral of the story is, right? It's a little embarrassing, but the moral of the story is, even us tech guys, right? It's the internet is a crazy place. Mm-hmm. And even though we talk about it. I mean, I've got about 8 levels of security here at the house, and something still happened. I started my comments at church by saying, you know, it's my fundamental belief that the average guy is screwed when it comes to technology. I mean, it's a losing battle, right?
Those exact words I went to church.
I said that exactly. They're screwed. They're not gonna. It's a losing battle for the average guy. And that's kind of why I do what I do. That was one of those moments. But hey, even us average guys, get hit on those. But I do believe those 4 fundamental things are very, very important to making sure that your network security is there. So if your router's not secure, get it secure. You know, figure out if you've thrown away the user's manual, Google it. Get it out. Learn your router. You need to know how that thing works, right? I mean, none of us have open secure routers, right? Any of us? No?
No.
And you know what? That's becoming less and less common. Most people are figuring out how to secure the routers at this point. Even the average guy is figuring that out. 2, make sure you have Microsoft Security Essentials installed, right? That's an easy, free, everybody should have it. And I like Malwarebytes as kind of a backup, a manual backup. They have a paid version, but the free version works pretty well. Works pretty well too. So I like those two in a 1-2 punch. Microsoft Security Essentials runs every day. Malwarebytes is there just in case I need it. And that's the Malwarebytes is industrial strength. That is one of the best any malware, any virus. They really do a good job over there at malwarebytes.org. Mm-hmm. And it's good. And like I said, they have a paid version. I encourage you to use it. It's good if you want to pay. I think it's $30. It's a great tool. I just use the free version, and it's great. So
and you can find it cheaper.
Yeah,
you can find it cheaper on deals. I think I got mine for like $19 or something.
19 for Malwarebytes?
It might have been even 15, Jim.
Okay, sure, yeah. Sure. Look around if you want to enable some of the automatic filtering or automatic management of your PC as well as automatic scanning, right? Rich, are there any other benefits to the paid version of that?
I'm not running it now. I don't remember. Okay. I put it on so I could tell people if I recommend it or not. Yeah. And I would recommend it, but I'm just not using it.
Well, you can't go without antivirus, and it's free for Microsoft. And so these are the two I use frequently. Rich, you read through my article. One of the things that caught your attention is I recommend using Open DNS, which real quick though, for those who don't know, right, your internet traffic comes off your PC, goes through your router, out through your modem to DNS server, which is probably your ISP. So your ISP hosts all these servers and they direct your traffic somewhere on the internet. By the way, your ISP doesn't care where you go, right? They filter nothing. So OpenDNS is a service. Just go to opendns.com. OpenDNS is a service. You can redirect that traffic to their servers, and they do care. So not only is it a little bit faster than most ISPs, not in every case. So if you point your servers to them, not only is your traffic getting faster, but they have lists and checks, and they scan for malware, and they really do try and protect you. So go ahead, Rich.
Yeah. So, like, in case you don't know what DNS is, think of it as like the internet phone book. You type in a name and you get a number. Anyway, OpenDNS. So I was thinking about it. I says, geez, you know what? I've heard of kids sitting in schools bypassing the filters, web filters, that the admins put on in the school. And I says, So I typed in Google and I wrote OpenDNS, how to bypass. And I came up with something called FreeGate. So I fired. I didn't.